All right, now let's talk about epidermal appendages. The word epidermal appendages is very evolutionary in its idea. So first of all, what are the appendages? Hair and nails. So what we mean by appendages is things that are stuck onto the skin and grow out of the skin. And that very word appendage assumes that they are kind of evolutionary. And because in humans, they are considered vestigial. What does vestigial mean? Well, what's a vestige? It's a sign that something used to happen. So if you look at a dog, what does a dog have all over its body? Hair, fur, and what's the purpose of that? Keep it warm and protect it. In humans, is our hair meant to protect us and keep us warm? Not really. So it's considered vestigial because it no longer serves an evolutionary purpose. So not that you have to be evolutionary to assess hair, but when you hear that term vestigial, the person who came up with that term was thinking from an evolutionary standpoint. So it's nice to understand that words have meanings and lean in a certain direction. All right, so the sebaceous glands, we talked about those. Hair in humans is used for what purpose? Okay, it does keep us a little warm, but... Oh, we're not talking about nose hair. We're talking about this hair. And that, because this isn't technically skin inside there. It's a mucous membrane. Slight difference. Yeah. So what does the hair serve? Okay, it does protect the top of our head from sun, unless we're thinning. What's the major thing? What did everyone in this room do this morning, except for you?
Brushed it.
Did their hair. Why is that? What's that?
Vanity.
Cosmetic purposes. We use it to identify ourselves. Has anyone here ever known someone in the military? Okay, when they got their head shaved, and you're like, you couldn't even tell who they were anymore? Now, when I went through basic training, we all got our hair done. Yeah, we're still wearing our civilian clothes. And so a little while later, I go into the bathroom, and there was like a group of us all just looking at our hair in shock, lack of hair. And I couldn't tell which one was me until I looked at the clothes. Yeah, so we use hair to identify ourselves, and we also use it to try and make ourselves more or less attractive.
That's its purpose,
that's it. It's an evolutionary purpose, though.
Yeah.
Well, evolutionarily, when we were apes, supposedly...
Hey,
I'm not an evolutionist, so I don't have to answer that question. Yeah, that's one of the great mysteries of life for the evolutionist is why did we lose all of that hair? And does that mean that people who are hairy all over are less evolved? I can't answer that. Now, sweat glands. We have two different kinds of sweat glands. We have eccrine and apocrine. Now, eccrine glands open directly onto the skin, and they are what produces sweat. And the purpose of them is to regulate our temperature. Then we have apocrine glands. Apocrine glands do not release directly onto the skin. They release into hair follicles. And they are what's responsible for Deo. Now, they are typically not active until a person reaches puberty, which is why little kids usually don't have to wear deodorant. And then once they hit that, 9, 10, 11, you gotta start wearing deodorant. Oh, by the way, the body odor produced is highly influenced by a person's diet. So, if you ever smell someone who's from India and you're like, man, people from India have a distinct smell, it's partly genetic, but it's also partly diet. Actually, a lot diet.
Do you have
I don't know about that. But people who smoke, even if they haven't smoked in a day or two, you can still smell it come out of their skin, especially if they exercise. If someone eats a lot of curry, you can smell that come out of a person's skin. Cloves, you can kind of smell that a little bit. You know, but you really have to eat that food on a regular basis in order for it to really affect how you smell. All right, let's talk about nails for a moment. Now, nails in humans are also vestigial. We do not use them to slash and kill. But we do use them to protect the ends of our fingers, and we use them to attract a mate. I mean, why else do women go through all that trouble? Acrylic nails and nails out to here. And 'cause I don't know any guy who's like, oh, baby, look at those nails. Okay, they do it for other girls. I guess it's territorial. You know, you don't mess with me. Okay, if you say so. All right, anyway. So nails in humans are highly cosmetic, but we also use them to protect the nerve endings at the end of our fingers.
We're not allowed to have acrylic nails.
No. Yeah. While you're in nursing, in the nursing school, you're not allowed to have acrylic nails. Technically, in the hospital, if you're involved in patient care, you should also not have acrylic nails. But a lot of hospitals are a little bit lax in enforcing that. So the reason is because it's really easy for bacteria to get under there. And then you can be spreading that from patient to patient because it's impossible to wash underneath the acrylic nails. There are some studies done a while back, and they cultured acrylic nails.
Oh,
and, yeah, not good stuff. Especially now, like before, MRSA was really only in the hospitals. You know what MRSA is, by the way? Does anyone not know what MRSA is? Okay. So it's a very resistant staphylococcus bacteria. And, you know, 20 years ago, MRSA really was only in hospitals. But now we have it, you know, out in the community. There's actually a couple students who ended up with MRSA. We actually have a nursing student, who had MRSA. Yeah, not in this room. Yeah, before they became a nursing student. But, you know, so now that it's much more common, it's, you know, even if you just wanted acrylic nails in your own curricular recreational life, you might want to think twice about it. So, anyway, nail bed underneath the nail is very vascular, a lot of blood vessels under there. Now, your nail is generated by the matrix. So, go ahead and look at your nails for a moment. Now, see the very, very bottom part? It kind of turns a little bit whitish right at the very, very base. That, just below that, is the matrix, and that's actually what... That's actually what generates the nail. Now, has anyone here ever lost a nail?
Yeah.
All right. Now, once you pulled the nail out, does it just end suddenly, or is it kind of like it kind of drifts off into like a little fleshy part? That little fleshy part is the matrix. So there's no like nail, not nail. It's kind of like nail, skin. So there's kind of like a transition period between the skin and the nail. That's the matrix. The matrix is covered by periungual folds. Now, peri means around, ungual means nail. So these little folds right here on your skin, those are the periungual folds. You know, basically the little skin surrounding your nail. And then there's a cuticle that seals the gap between the fold. So look at your cuticle. And the purpose of that cuticle is to fill the gap so that stuff doesn't get trapped underneath the periungual folds. So when you go and get a manicure, tell them, please don't push my cuticles back. That's unhealthy. It allows bacteria to get into my periungual folds. All right, so now we've talked about the structures of all of these things. Let's talk about the function of skin. Skin, the very first function is it is a protection barrier. It's what separates you from the environment. Without your skin, you would not be you, because all your stuff would just leak out. It's a protection from chemicals, from temperature, from air, from water, from bacteria. We use it for sensation. You use it to feel things, to palpate your patients. We use it for temperature regulation and for identification. We know what one another looks like because of our skin features. We also use it to communicate. If a person turns white or gray, they might be scared or nervous. If a person turns red and flushed, might be embarrassed. Wound repair. Your skin heals itself. Absorption and excretion. We can absorb things through the skin. What do we call that if it's a medicine?
Transdermal.
And we can also use it to excrete things. You actually excrete some drugs in sweat. You know, cigarette smoke can be excreted through your pores. We also use it to make vitamin D in response to sun exposure. All right, now developmental aspects. Little itty bitty babies. Little itty bitty babies have hair. Yay for them. A lot of times their hair will fall out and then grow back afterwards. After they, you know, they have hair when they first get delivered, it falls out, and sometimes it falls out and then grows back. They are have very ineffective temperature regulation. Say that again. Very ineffective. Why is that? What did we say yesterday? Who loses heat quicker? Little people. So, because they're little, and because they have such thin skin, and they don't really have that much fat, they're very difficult to keep themselves adequately regulated, which is why we keep babies wrapped up, bundled. What? Oh, you said burrito? I thought you said bundled. Yeah. Yeah, talk louder. All right. Now, two things about infants. Sometimes infants will be born with this little peach fuzz all over their body. That's called lanugo. And it's spelled just like you would imagine in Spanish. Lanugo. L-A-N-U-G-O. For those of you who don't speak Spanish. I'm not sure about the purple stuff, but sometimes babies will be born with this like cheesy looking, it looks like they're covered in cream cheese, and that's called vermix, V-E-R-M-I-X.
What is that?
Cheesy looking substance. I don't really know. Yeah, I forgot most of that stuff because I don't deal with babies. But you need to know that some babies are covered with it, and that's what it's called. Yeah, they wipe it off them after birth. Yeah. Now, some babies will have, it'll look like they have little pimples, like little acne, but it's really just pores that are filled with stuff. And that's called milia, M-I-L-I-A. Interestingly enough, the condition of having milia is called milia riasis, R-I-A-S-I-S. So milia and then riasis. All right, so that's itty-bitty babies. We also talked about that they're, at least in white babies, their melanocytes are not fully active. Also, you'll also notice that even black babies are not as black. So even though they have some melanin production, it's not fully developed for a couple months. Puberty. As a person goes into puberty, apocrine function begins. Yes, ma'am.
So what happens with an albino?
With an albino, they have no melanocytes. So they can't ever produce melanin.
And that's a genetic defect?
Yeah, that's a, well, let's not use the word defect. But yes, it's a genetic condition, yes. Again, let's not use the word error. Well, it's just not there. Yeah.
Oh.
It should be there, but it's not there. So they can't produce melanin.
So like would it, that's from birth, right?
Right. That's,
would it ever happen while, you know, as you're aging?
Okay. There are some people who, for whatever reason, as they're growing up, they get an immune reaction that kills some of their melanocytes, and that's called vitiligo, and they'll have patches that are completely white. I've never seen vitiligo happen everywhere, and it's usually they have a complete lack of melanin in those areas. So, like, one of my patients in Gainesville, he was very, very dark. He was like a black guy, but on both his hands, splotches. I mean, it looked like he had a white person. I mean, like whiter than me hands.
What's it called?
It's called vitiligo. VITILIGO. It's an immune process that kills off some of the melanocytes. Dr. Mims, the dean of the Music and Fine Arts School. If you ever look at his hands, he's got vitiligo, but it's not as noticeable because he's a white guy. Say again. Curable? I don't think so. But it's also asymptomatic.
Can you increase the rate of it?
Let's not talk about Michael Jackson.
Okay. Well,
he used to be a good artist. And and let's just leave it at that. No, we don't have a cure for it, and it's not a smooth thing. I mean it's a clear line. It's like color, no color. So it's not, you know. I think Michael Jackson is full of it when he says that.